Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Welcome to the Billboard Chart Beat Podcast. Gary Trust, Billboard's co-director of charts.
And hey guys, it's Trevor Anderson, chart manager here at Billboard.
Time for another countdown, Trevor.
Well, Gary, you know, Gary is really in love with this countdown format. You guys saw for the past, if you've been tuning in since the beginning, at least a year, Gary never did a countdown. And then he did the one, the first one was 2007, 97?
97 and then 2007, back to back.
And look at that. All of a sudden, you know, he's got that, he's got the one we did for 96.
Got a couple more planned.
This one, exactly. There's a countdown fiend.
Well, yeah, I grew up listening to Casey Kasem and all the countdowns. Did a countdown in college, so this is the one thing I know how to do.
Were you a fan of like the count on Sesame Street? Was that your man growing up?
I remember him, but I don't think that was the reason that I got into this. He didn't count backwards.
Right? He didn't. He counted up. He counted, you know. You can't trick kids. That's too much for kids. You want to give us your great count impression here? I hear you do a fantastic impression of the count on Sesame Street, actually. So, why don't you give the audience a taste?
Ah, that's one bat. Two bats. Three fabulous flyers.
Pretty good, right?
Amazing, Gary. Fantastic.
It sounded like the real thing.
Beautiful. Yep. Yep.
All right, so we're going back 1987, 30 years. And, you know, people on Twitter have said they like this format. So that's why we're doing some of these, too. I think it's fun. People seem to like them.
Gary listens to the Twitter trolls.
At least one person. At so
least. Shout out to the one fan who appreciates this.
So we're going to go back 30 years, the Hot 100 this week, dated August 29th, 1987. When we've done these in the past, I always ask you, Trevor, what were you doing back then? But I can't ask that this time, can I?
Well, I guess you can. I mean, there's technically nothing stopping you.
4BT, right?
There you go.
That's
4BT. I like that. Yeah, was not alive.
All right.
Parents barely out of high school.
Really?
I think 86, 87 were my their 2 years.
All right. What were your parents doing back then? I'll ask that.
Ooh, I don't know. I guess they were starting university and university. What am I? Some sort of like old British, you know, middle aged person.
Somewhere in Europe or something.
Yeah. They're on the Fulbright. They were just down in Texas, you know, making a life,
waiting for you to come along.
Just that
life was meaningless.
Just sat around, you know, day by day collecting dust, and then one day the miracle happened. You know.
All right. I was 13, 1987. I was awash in bar mitzvah money.
You know, when you're 13 and you even have like, you know, $20, you feel like on top of the world. And I'm sure if we do the inflation too, ooh, Gary was probably owning the city.
Can I put in for that now?
I mean, you can put in. We'll see what it gives you out.
You weren't born, but you're gonna get an education here.
Yeah, and just because I wasn't around doesn't mean, you know, of course, these are classic times for music in the 80s. So a lot of these songs, obviously very popular still to this day. And a lot of these artists, of course, still hit makers, some of the all-time greats.
Ed, what's my favorite word?
Vacation.
It's a good word, but no, not that. When it comes to music.
Boston.
Also good, but specifically for music.
When it comes to Gary's favorite word when it comes to music, Mariah.
That's also, that might be.
Okay, see, I'm not batting zero at all right here.
What's a word we've said on the podcast when we've had hit songs deconstructed? Talk about catchy choruses.
This is the worst quiz I've ever taken in my life. Repetition, sampling, hook, catchy.
Hook.
Hook. Driven.
Nope. It's a term. This whole countdown is a hook.
Peter Pan.
Hook fest.
Fest. Hook fest. That'll be the name of Gary's new music festival coming to Boston every year. Hook fest. I want 25% of the proceeds, gross revenue profits.
So catchy. So this is just really just 40 catchy choruses in a row.
Gary's putting that's a lot of pressure to put on all these songs.
So we're going to count down a 40 to 21 this week, and our special guest coming up, because it was her first week on the Hot 100. Tiffany is going to be here later on in the podcast. We're going to talk for a while about her career, 30 years in the music business, and new music now. And you guys had a little connection, Trevor, when you guys started chatting. So we'll see if we can hear that.
Notice the way that he spit out the word Trevor. So I think Gary's a little jealous.
Stole Tiffany.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all coming up. Let's get started. The Billboard Hot 100's top 40 this week, 30 years ago, August 29th, 1987. Kicking off at number 40. Numbers 40 through 36 in the Billboard Hot 100 this week, 30 years ago. The Hot 100 dated August 29th, 1987. Heart, two songs by Heart at numbers 40 and 38. We're already going out of order. Going from 40 to 38, it was Heart, Alone, and the follow-up single, Who'll You Run To? So Alone had hit number one. Who'll You Run To was entering the top 40 at number 38. And they were one of those bands, that they weren't the only band that in the 80s had a comeback that was very poppy after more of a 70s just total rock sound. Chicago, Starship, REO Speedwagon, a lot of bands kind of realized they could go a little more commercial. A lot of big ballads, a lot of big power ballads in that era. Heart was right at the center of that. All right, number 39 in between those two Heart songs, absolute legend, Herb Alpert with Making Love in the Rain, written by Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. And if you listen to the whole song, you hear Janet Jackson in there, and she had been on the previous single, Two Diamonds, which is a top five hit. So Janet Jackson, who was on A&M Records, kind of helping out her boss, because Herb Alpert is the A of A&M Records. He co-founded A&M. So total collaboration for that song.
Ooh, Gary just hitting us with the facts today. Look at that. He connected Herb Alpert, Janet Jackson, Jimmy Jam, Terry Lewis. Yeah, and one of the cool things that we see with this song, Herb Alpert had been around for you know, 20 years and plus, you know, in the business. I mean, had huge albums back in the 60s.
Right.
That's something something you don't see quite in the same vein today. That's kind of cool about the 80s. A lot of these acts who had been popular in the 60s and 70s, this is, closer to 1990 than it is 1980.
Right.
But they're still having some hits on the charts. They're still having some resurgence, some good moments. I mean, nowadays, acts who are 20 years deep in their career,
yeah,
very rarely are going to be you know, putting out top 40 singles like the way that Herb is here. So
no, that's a great point. He'd been on the Hot 100 since 1962. So you're talking 25 years at that point. So that would be like now someone who started in 1992 being on the Hot 100. You're not seeing a lot of acts who were new in the early 90s now. So yeah, I feel like it was a time that was more open to veteran acts back then. All right. Number 37, John Cougar Mellencamp, when he was still John Cougar Mellencamp, Paper and Fire. It was new in the top 40 this week. Would go on to hit number 9. But people probably know the follow-up better. You hear it more on radio now. Cherry Bomb got to number 8. A Paper and Fire, a little more obscure in the John Mellencamp catalog. And Check It Out was the third single. I think that's actually the best song. Got to number 14.
Check It Out. That's okay.
Check It Out.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah, I'll have to check it out.
And number 36, Gloria Estefan and Miami Sound Machine, Rhythm Is Gonna Get You. First of 5 singles from the album Let It Loose. And what's interesting is it got to number 5. It was on its way down at this point. But the biggest hits from the album were actually the 4th and 5th singles. So Anything For You got to number 1. That was the 4th single. And then 1, 2, 3, the 5th single, was a number 3 hit. So it was a really deep album. And the more they kept going, the more they just kept having even bigger hits. Gloria was on the Billboard on Broadway podcast recently. She was at Billboard, so you can find a lot more about Gloria by listening to that.
Yeah, and I think for the musical On Your Feet, which is, you know, the story of her life and her, with the band and her some solo attempts, and of course the big rehab after the tour bus accident comes in a few years after this point. The musical actually just closed on Broadway. Actually, it closed August 20th, had opened in November 2015, so almost 2 years, which, you know, I think is a great run for that, especially, you know, for a soundtrack that is not really Broadway driven. You know, I think a lot of people even kind of wondered if how this would fare on Broadway. You know, the sound is not, you know, show tune-y kind of sound, something that's really working. But I mean, for 2 years, you know, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and she was really, you know, in the early stages of her career at that point, 1987, 30 years later. She's pretty legendary at this point. Really, so everyone we've talked about so far, John Cougar Mellencamp, Hart, Herb Alpert, pretty good start here to the countdown.
Well, let's keep it going. We got 5 more songs for you, including at least another couple legends who people will remember for sure, so check them out. You got that good. All right, coming in 35 to 31 on the Hot 100 this week back in 1987. Looking at number 35, You Got the Look by Prince. So the song is about to be an eventual number 2 just at this point, starting out its Hot 100 life, working its way up there. The song is a duet, though, with an uncredited Sheena Easton on vocals there. So most people probably, you know, when you hear the song, we'll realize that that is not Prince singing both parts, but that is Sheena Easton back there. And the pair actually has a history of working together multiple times. They'll have a duet on the Hot 100 in a couple of years from the Batman soundtrack that Prince, you know, really was the sole orchestrator for. The song is The Arms of Orion. That's like a Prince title of a song. It's like, so like, huh?
Yeah, no, it was a ballad. It was a good song. It was very low-key kind of a song after Bat Dance, but
yeah,
good, yeah.
Not the biggest hit in the world, you know, pretty modest, but for both of them, number 36 is its peak, but still notable that it, you know, got on there.
Same thing we were talking about Mellencamp before. Where do you put You Got the Look in the Prince catalog? And I think it's just a matter of he had so many hits that for most people, this would be an absolute career song. But when he's got so much other stuff, it maybe gets a little bit forgotten.
That's a good question. I think it, I mean, as if I'm some like Paisley Park expert, but I do think that, yeah, it's like, especially coming from when it does in the context of it. You know, this is on the Sign of the Times album. This double album has a few, you know, I mean, Sign of the Times itself, a more socially conscious kind of song, a few more experimental songs coming in later. You know, this is really a straightforward kind of pop, a little bit of rock song. So, you know, I think people kind of overlook it because it's not this big grand endeavor. Clocks in at about 4 minutes. You know, by all standards, it's pretty safe song.
Yeah, and anything if it's right after Purple Rain, it's just kind of in the shadow of just some of those huge hits. And I feel like maybe his early 90s stuff is maybe regarded maybe a little bit better, sort of the comeback with New Power Generation, some of those songs.
Yeah.
Maybe the sound just went a little more core R&B at that point. People kind of remember that. But this is still one of his big 80s hooks, but it just feels like after Purple Rain and When Doves Cry just showed he had so many hits that this one is just another one at that point, as big as it was.
And I think it's one of those things too that's a little understated for Prince, because people do kind of expect that, you know, the Artur, the, you know, kind of mysterious guy, whatever. I mean, Prince, if he wants to, can write, you know, a pretty straightforward, catchy, danceable, you know, pop hook that everyone really enjoys. I mean, this is one of those songs, I think, for outside of the Purple Rain era, that if you want to get people like dancing to a Prince song, this is one of the best bets out there.
Right. And you know it's a Prince song because "you" is spelled with a U.
Yeah. Before Usher came along, that was Prince's thing. And one more thing I kind of found interesting about You Got the Look. Actually, the second longest charting song on the Hot 100 of all Prince's hits. Last 25 weeks on the Hot 100, which was only outdone later in the 90s by The Most Beautiful Girl in the World with 26 weeks. Huh. So, you know, this song lasts longer on the chart than some of those major hits, When Doves Cry, Kiss, some of those other things. So,
and I'll add one more thing because we just know, seems like we have to keep mentioning things about this song. With Sheena Easton, uncredited officially on the song. We heard back at number 39, Janet Jackson, officially uncredited on the Herb Alpert song. This was kind of an era where people would collaborate, but unlike today, it wasn't featuring several artists. It was kind of done more as favors, or people worked together, and it was a different time financially, where nowadays there'd probably be a whole team of management making sure that everyone got their cut. So it's kind of more of an innocent era at that point.
Kind of nice in some ways that, you know, it's not all about the money.
Yep.
All right, I'll keep on climbing. Number 34. We've got Shakedown by Bob Seger, notable in particular in Seger's catalog as his only Hot 100 number one hit. And this is on his 30th chart entry, so, you know, the guy's been waiting a long time to get to number one. We actually only have one more hit on the Hot 100 after this period, which would be in 1991, the song The Real Love.
Right.
So the song's from the Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack, the sequel, of course, starring Eddie Murphy. I mean, everyone kind of wanted a piece. What, did I forget somebody?
No, I was going to say, I feel like we can now know which countdown we're doing, which year, by which Eddie Murphy soundtrack.
That's how you can measure the charts in Eddie Murphy's.
It's
that's
the Eddie Murphy music podcast.
This, I like Eddie. We need to get Eddie on here. Maybe he'll talk about some of this stuff.
I feel like he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but you know, maybe he's unpredictable. Maybe he'll be, you know.
If we said we have a podcast that is all about music on the charts for each of your movies, he might be like, that's different.
He might. Call Eddie up, Gary.
All right. Spinoff of the Chartbeat podcast.
Okay, anyway, so sorry. Back to Shakedown and Bob Seger. What we got here, Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack coming through. And interestingly about this song, so Shakedown was actually never originally for Bob Seger. Originally, it actually had been for Glenn Frey of the Eagles, who had hit from the soundtrack, the original soundtrack,
right,
with The Heat Is On,
right,
which was a number two hit. So the way it goes down, and this is also an anecdote courtesy of our friend Fred Bronson in his Billboard Book of Number One Hits. So Glenn Frey originally contracted to do the song, was not a really big fan of the song, but about 10 days before he was supposed to record it, came down with laryngitis. So, of course, they're scrambling to figure out who could record it. Irving Azoff, manager of the Eagles, comes up with the idea to have Seger record it. Seger, now he keeps the chorus. He says, okay, but he rewrites all the verses, which is why he has the writing credit, because he did rewrite the song and records it, and it ends up being a number one.
I could hear Glenn Frey doing it, I suppose, although it feels like it maybe ultimately is better for Bob Seger. It's a little crunchier. kind of a sound.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been Glenn, could have been that close, and interestingly enough, he had a number two, like we said, with the Heat is on. Could have been that number one.
Yeah, right, but, Glenn Frey missed potentially. Yeah. Number one solo hit.
But it went out to Seager, but apparently, also according to the anecdote, when it hits number one, Glenn calls up Bob and says, well, hey, at least we kept the money in Michigan. So the Michigan boys getting a little state love there.
Right.
All right, now this is not the only song we're going to see from the Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack. We're actually going to see one in just a few minutes, and we'll save the last one for the next edition, just because it happens to be pretty up there during this time. And jumping to number 33, and jump is the operative word here, we got Jumpstart by Natalie Cole. So the daughter of the legendary Nat King Cole is mounting a pretty big pop comeback at this time. The song Jumpstart on its way to a number 13 peak, which will actually be Natalie's highest on the Hot 100 since 1978. So we're talking almost a decade there of not being this high on the Hot 100. This song will also be number 2 on R&B, which will also be her highest since 78. And it's not that she had, you know, not been putting out music for this time. She put out about 3 or 4 albums. None of them had really caught fire the same way that her music in the 70s had. You know, there were hits that This Will Be, you know, An Everlasting Love, huge right, hit for right. her when she came out. Sophisticated Lady, a few other top 10s up there. But ran into some real problems and personal problems too at this time. You know, yeah. A lot of some drug addiction, yeah. just some personal issues going on in the early part of the 80s. So with this album that comes out in 87, Everlasting is the title of it. You got Jumpstart, you know, which becomes a top 20 hit. And probably the best known song on the album is going to be her cover of Bruce Springsteen's Pink Cadillac.
Right.
Which was B-side for him. So many people probably don't realize that's a Bruce Springsteen cover. But it's a song that he wrote and she took to the top 10 just a few months after this.
And I Live for Your Love was also from this album. A huge ballad. Also another single.
Yeah.
I lived through it. I remember.
Of course, Gary remembers the ballads at the time.
Well, that's late 80s.
But this is the production on the song. This is just very, you know, I think what a lot of the R&B women were doing production.
Well, you know who co-wrote and co-produced this song? Right there, the small print.
I do. Oh, it's the Callaways.
Right.
The Callaways.
Yes. The brothers.
Yes.
And 3 years later, 1990, they would have a number 2 Hot 100 hit, I Want to Be Rich. So that's that style, that same late 80s, early 90s pop R&B.
That's what was in, yeah. And at 32, another R&B star of the time. Last name, Jackson. First name, not Michael or Janet or Jermaine or any of them. It's actually Freddie Jackson, who is not one of the Jacksons.
You just needed the name Jackson in the 80s.
Get on the chart. I guess it worked that well. So Freddie Jackson, we got the song Jam Tonight, which will actually be Freddie's fourth and his final top 40 hit on the Hot 100. Now, this is one of those weird cases that I think, when you look back at the time, how sort of split some of the genre attention and focusing could be at the time. Because Freddie Jackson, you know, has 4 top 40 hits on the Hot 100, never hits the top 10, but on the R&B charts, he is like, he's absolute dynamite. It's kind of crazy. I mean, this guy has 10 number one hits on the R&B chart. It always strikes me as kind of insane how, you know, when you look at his R&B prowess, I mean, even when you look at some of our greatest of all time charts, I mean, just to put in perspective, you know, this album that Jam Tonight comes off of is just like the first time. That album spends 26 weeks at number one on the R&B chart.
Yeah.
The only two albums to ever spend more time are Whitney Houston's debut and Michael Jackson's Thriller. All right, and we'll keep on climbing. One more, 31 that you guys heard, Carrie by Europe.
I think the most interesting thing about this is that the Final Countdown peaked at number 8. Carrie would go on to peak at number 3. So this is actually their highest charting Hot 100 hit. And I'm sure you'd ask most people about Europe. Final Countdown would be the song they think is the biggest. Maybe similar to Bob Seger, too. Shakedown. I'm not sure anyone would necessarily, or you know, too many people, would pick Shakedown as the biggest Bob Seger song. They're probably going to think Against the Wind or some of his other hits. But
they're going to think Old Time Rock and Roll.
Old Time Rock and Roll,
Tom
right.
Cruise has immortalized
right.
that, yeah.
But again, it always comes down to it's how songs have the chart life when they're out originally, but you never know how years later they're going to last in pop culture.
And I mean, of course, you know, sometimes they get picked up in things like commercials or advertisements or whatnot, and that, you know, takes it on a whole other path.
Right, just in the last year or so. Final Countdown.
Yeah.
It was the Geico commercial. All right, let's continue on here. Numbers 30 through 26. 30 through 26 on the Billboard Hot 100 this week, 30 years ago, August 29th, 1987. We heard at number 30, Lisa Lisa and Cult Jam, Lost in Emotion. Their second number one that year after Head to Toe. So they were one of the biggest acts of 1987. That whole freestyle sound was so big back then. They're a little bit more on the R&B side of that kind of sound, but you know, Cover Girls, all these acts that were so big in that little pocket there in the late 80s.
It feels like one of those songs that you like. You know, I didn't grow up in New York City, but I feel like that's a song you would hear like on like people's stoops or something. Just kind of like, you know, nice summer, spring day. Like, I guess at this point, it's really closer to summer, fall. But, you know, it's kind of like an easygoing kind of fun song.
All right. Number 29, another legend. We heard Herb Alpert back at number 39. Number 29, Smokey Robinson with One Heartbeat. Here's one of the most interesting things, I think, about this song. It was his 10th and final top 10 on the Hot 100. That's including his whole career with the Miracles, all the hits they had. But it was his first set of back-to-back top tens, because right before One Heartbeat, Just to See Her, another guy who's so deep into his career. Here in 1987, he's having two of his biggest hits.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what kept Smokey going for so long? Because like you said, I mean, he was, I mean, really one of the very first, you know, people to come out of the Motown machine. And, you know, here he is almost, like you said, 25 years later, and getting a lot of big hits in the 80s. I mean, Cruising, a couple, right. Like, there's a nice little resurgence for him, really.
I think you said it earlier, Trevor, there was sort of a more openness to veteran acts back then. Maybe a little bit before the video era had really kicked in, veteran stars didn't have to worry as much about looking younger, looking hipper in videos. So maybe that was a part of the longevity back then.
I mean, when you think about it, really, you know, Smokey comes out of Motown and Stevie and right. Lionel, Michael Jackson.
Yeah, 66 Hot 100 hits for Smokey Robinson over the years. Amazingly, one number one of all the hits he had with the Miracles and solo. You know what his number one was?
Tears of a Clown. And
so Smokey Robinson, number 29. And again, we'll hear the tribute song to Smokey Robinson coming up next week when we do numbers 20 to 1 on our two-part 1987 Top 40 Countdown. Number 28, it's another Beverly Hills Cop 2 song, Cross My Broken Heart by The Jets. One of the co-writers of this song is Stephen Bray, known more for writing a lot of songs with Madonna over the years, Express Yourself, Causing a Commotion.
No Benny, unfortunately, involved with this Jets. That's all I got.
It was a family band, the Jets. They'd have other big hits. Make It Real would be a huge hit in 1988. And yeah, another Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack. It's the second of three we'll be hearing in the countdown. And I'll shout out one that actually just missed the top 40. It was rising this week, though, number 49, Pointer Sisters song Be There. Just missed the top 40, but we'll mention it here.
Also, shout out to the Pointer Sisters for doing the back-to-back with the Beverly Hills Cop soundtracks. First soundtrack had Neutron Dance on it, and so now they're reviving their fortunes with Be There. So Pointer Sisters and Beverly Hills Cop go together like that.
All right, here's a song at number 27 that feels like it's going to be one of the more obscure songs in the countdown, called Lies by Jonathan Butler. And it kind of how you mentioned before, Trevor, about guys who had a lot of R&B success, crossover every now and again. Big in R&B, big in jazz over the years. And late 80s was pretty welcoming to acts like Herb Alpert and Kenny G and Jonathan Butler. Time for some of this smooth jazz to cross over back then.
Shout out to Jonathan Butler for his cover of the Staple Singers. If you're ready, come go with me. That's a great cover of that song.
He's still going. She had a number one jazz album in 2015. So again, a lot of these artists we're flashing back to 30 years ago, still having great success nowadays.
That's how you do it.
And at number 26, here's it's a group, Danny Wilson. Song is Mary's Prayer. Really catchy song. Another one of those. See, that's why it's a hook fest. Another one of those catchy songs, Mary's Prayer. And the lead singer, Gary Clark, he'd go on to write a lot of songs in the 90s and 2000s. He actually wrote songs for both Mel C and Emma Bunton, Sporty and Baby Spice.
All right, we're going to keep on climbing into the top 25 on the Hot 100 at this point. So let's check them out. Don't throw away the chance. All right, number 25, Gary kind of alluded to Madonna a little bit. We're going to get a little deeper into that with the song we heard, 25. That was not Madonna singing, but the song is Who Found Who, Jelly Bean featuring Alyssa Fiorillo. That's good. You know, put that little sauce on her name.
See, you don't know how to
got those saucy vocals.
If you don't know how to pronounce her name, just do it in the Italian version. It masks it right there.
Exactly. People will be so focused on the accent, they won't care about the content. Now, Gary actually mentioned a few minutes ago, brought up the name Madonna on this countdown. That was actually not Madonna singing, but for big Madonna fans, they'll know Jelly Bean is the same Jelly Bean John, nicknamed Jelly Bean Benitez, who probably some of his most enduring works people would really know are some of the early Madonna songs from her first album, songs like Borderline, Holiday, the song Crazy for You. He had hand in producing. A lot of those tracks, and actually remixed Lucky Star. Madonna did not like the original mix of the song, so she asked Jelly Bean, who was her boyfriend and producer at the time, to remix. What? To remix for her, turned it into a top five hit. So really, you know, the guy who in a lot of ways helped put Madonna on the map.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to see him get his own moment on the charts as the lead artist on this song.
Yeah. So this song's on its way up into the top 20 of the Hot 100. Jelly Bean also has another top 20 hit to his credit, the song Sidewalk Talk, actually co-written by Madonna. So that's a little reversal of roles for them. Madonna behind the scenes and Jelly Bean up there getting the artist credit. And this really actually starts one of the things that you know, we see a lot nowadays, especially, is the producer featuring the vocalist kind of credit style.
That's right.
Which is something that I thought was kind of, when I was looking into this, I didn't realize at the time, I thought Jelly Bean would be, you know, on the track. And I was like, wait a minute, this is Jelly Bean's producing.
He's the DJ Khaled of his time.
Exactly. Yeah, wait, was it Khaled or David Guetta or some of these folks? You know,
he just didn't shout out Jelly Bean at the beginning.
Like missed opportunity. Well, I guess Khaled does another one.
That's true.
Yeah.
Also his name, though.
Maybe like a Mike Will made it kind of thing. That would be more, yeah. All right. Keep on climbing to number 24. We got I Need Love, LL Cool J. So on its way to number 14. This song really will be the breakthrough for LL to mainstream audiences. His first charting song had only gotten into the 80s. This one getting all the way to number 14. So really introduces him to a lot of people across the nation. I think most people also remember this song. I don't know if you remember the time, Gary, how maybe transformative this was. I mean, this is a really, you know, it's a slower song. More importantly, the song is called I Need Love. It's a very, you know, almost like a ballad in terms of its themes and delivery. I mean, to talk about love in this particular way. I mean, this is a long way from a lot of, you know, all the pimping songs out there, all the whatnots. And even at the time, you know, a lot of people are rapping about social issues or even just, you know, having fun and kicking it. But
that's why ladies love Cool J.
Okay, oh, Gary. It's like Gary knew, because I was literally going to end by asking Gary if he knew what LL Cool J stood for. And he does. So I guess I could just move on to number 23, which is Give to Live, which is like a great slogan by the one and only Sammy Hagar. So Sammy Hagar, as most people probably know him from his stint with Van Halen in the late 80s, early 90s, will be their lead singer for about 10 years after David Lee Roth.
He was moonlighting from Van Halen on this song.
And let's keep on climbing up to number 22. We got Steve Winwood back in the High Life Again, which is the title track of the album at the time. Most people probably know the biggest off the album is going to be the song Higher Love,
right?
Which will be number one hit on the Hot 100. And ding, 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 Gary always knows I love to bring up my little Grammy facts. Higher Love wins the Grammy for Record of the Year.
Right.
So Steve cashing in out there as well.
Yeah, this is a great time for him. He just started having hits. I mean, he dates back to the 60s with all his the different bands he's been in. But late 80s, he just started having so many hits. The Finer Things, Roll With It would go to number one, 1988, Don't You Know What the Night Can Do. So big time for Steve Winwood.
And James Taylor is up there doing background vocals for the song.
Right. So. Yeah, you can hear him. You can hear him at the end of the song kind of clearly as it fades out.
All right, and after Steve Winwood closing us out for this episode, number 21, the stopping point for this week. How about a little Bananarama? I Heard a Rumor.
You know who co-wrote and produced that song? Stock Aitken Waterman, team that did so many hits in the late 80s into the 90s, a lot of the Kylie Minogue songs, Astley. They did the Rick Astley hits Together Forever and Never Gonna Give You Up. So that was that.
They're responsible for all that.
They started Rickrolling before that.
There would be no Rickrolling without these people.
Right.
That's how you...
Yeah, that really polished British pop dance that crossed over on the U.S. charts.
Yeah, for people who are looking for the title of the song, it is Rumor with a U because Bananarama is an English girl group. So this song, this is one of those songs that is so, you know, quintessential 80s catchy. I mean, pretty, the hook is what drives the song. And I mean, especially at the end, I mean, they repeat it on that fade out, you know, 6-7 times. And I think one of the great testaments to this song is particularly if you might not think you know this song, but when you, because based on the title, I Heard a Rumor, like, you know, whatever. But when you hear it, you know that melody and you know you've heard it. I'm sure that's probably actually used plenty of times in commercials or on, you know, sportscasts or whatnot. This is one of those, like, up there with, you know, like A Cruel Summer or...
their cover of Venus.
Yeah, Venus. I mean, Walking on Sunshine, all those songs where it's like that just fun 80s, you know, easy going.
Was I lying or has this been a hook fest?
I mean, well, ending on Bananarama for sure, that is definitely a hook fest. That song is super catchy. I mean, I Took America by Storm on its way to number four.
So, of course, we'll continue with numbers 20 all the way up to number 1 on next week's episode. But for now, we're gonna flip the other side of the chart and look at what was beneath number 40, a few things that stand out down there. Gary, in particular, a few things you want to call some attention to?
All right, highest debut at number 65 was by Boston band, The Cars, You Were the Girl. Maybe not one of their biggest hits, although I think it's a really good song. It's written by Rick Ocasek, lead singer. And just below at number 66, a real classic in the Fleetwood Mac catalog, Little Lies.
So even 10 years after Rumors, you know, yep. is there a peak still churning out some hits on the charts?
And say Christine McVie, co-write. She sings the song, and she has a new album out with Lindsey Buckingham. Fleetwood Mac, really good album, by the way. They still 40 years after Rumors, great songs.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, you know, those great songwriters in particular, I mean, their talents last, you know, all time.
And number 84, and this is why we're talking to her specifically this week, because this is when it all started for Tiffany. I Think We're Alone Now debuted. It was her first Billboard chart hit 30 years ago this week, August 29th, 1987. So Tiffany's joining us here on the podcast to talk about what it was like to be really young in the business. She has some really interesting insights about that. Talking about rock and country is where she started before she went pop. So we'll get into that, and some new music as well from Tiffany. So we're going to get into all that. Oh, along with her own countdown. Tiffany counts down her 5 favorite songs of hers at the end of the interview. And there really is some little connection between the two of you. Trevor, you can hear it.
Okay, well, we'll let the people judge for themselves. If you hear anything between Tiffany and I, just don't tell Gary, but let us know.
The Billboard Chartbeat Podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tiffany here on the Billboard Chartbeat Podcast. Welcome, Tiffany.
Well, thank you.
Welcome to New York.
New York is one of my favorite places to be, so I love it here. I have good friends here. I love to shop here.
You can get a lot
so
of
I'm
that
gonna
done.
Be a busy girl for the next 4 days that I'm here.
Where do you like to shop? Can we figure out where to
anywhere? Anywhere. I'm mostly vintage for me. I like the you know the real just interesting find. I mean, I'm an artist, so I can wear the most eccentric things. And for so many years, I think I was plain. You know, Vans and a jean jacket and just big hair, big bad. Badly crimped hair. So, you know, once in my 20s, I started getting into hair and makeup a little bit more and fashion. You know, and living in LA, I realized, wow, you know, I mean, it's all about designer, which I love, but it really is the unique find, the vintage pieces that interest me. So I love and just like, you know, if I have a couple hours going to thrift stores or different vintage stores and just kind of finding things that are different. I have a seamstress who works with me and she'll remake pieces for me. And, you know, I mean, so many times I'd go on the red carpet or something and somebody else is wearing the same dress. And that's embarrassing, especially if they're wearing it better than you. You're like, what? You know, but, you know, I find vintage to be, again, that one of a kind piece.
That's awesome. You can always make it your own. You know, that makes you feel a little like,
it does.
Cool,
it makes
original.
You feel special. Yeah. And like I said, I like to be a little eccentric, you know. Yeah, I love like platform shoes. I should have probably, I know I'm from the 80s, which I still love some of that fashion. But 60s and 70s really rocked.
What
would Janis wear? You know,
so living out loud.
Boas. Okay. I don't really do the boas, but I love like the quirky hats and stuff like that. I mean, my go-to is, you know, totally different, but Stevie Nicks. You know, I love all of her pieces, and that's been the person who's inspired me most with fashion and music and songwriting. So, you know, I look at all of the stuff that she's worn on stage before and the top hats, and just she's rock and roll, you know?
Yeah.
I love it.
Nice. So Tiffany and Stevie Nicks. I don't know, you know, interesting connection. We'll kind of circle back to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, what a lot of people maybe don't realize. They probably remember, I Think We're Alone Now, they remember the dance pop, but you've always kind of at heart been a rock chick, been a country chick. That's definitely really the sound you've always liked and where you started.
That's where I started off in country music. Started singing professionally when I was 9. Started going to Nashville when I was 10. And Hoyt Axton, Joy to the World, all the boys and girls now. I started singing with him when I was 9 on stage, in bars, actually. I wasn't allowed to be there. So I'd sneak in the back door, sing 2 songs, and out the door I'd go. And he recommended for me to go to Nashville and start working with his mother, Mae Axton. And I did that probably from, you know, the time I was like 12 to, or 10 to 12. And it was great. I loved country music. I still love country music. I'm really partial to old school country music. Patsy Cline, Tammy Wynette.
So like even before your time, like
Yeah. I mean, that's what was played at my house. And then by the time I was like 12, my older cousin started showing me, I was sneaking in her bedroom, if you want all honesty, and playing her albums. And I was playing Heart, and I found, you know, Fleetwood Mac. And that was it. As soon as I heard Stevie's voice, I just really identified with
and
it.
And there's a similarity there. There really is between
there is.
Your voices.
I have that gravel to my voice. And it was something about, I mean, it doesn't matter what she sings, you just know it's Stevie Nicks. And her writing was, you know, really spoke to me. Even though I didn't understand any of it, it was mystical and magical and, you know, it was just interesting to me. And her love songs and her melodies, you know, really, I've always been an old soul. So they just spoke to me. And I've been a fan ever since. And that's kind of where, you know, as an artist, I'm always wanting to raise the bar to go, you know, as a songwriter, I want to be just as good as her, you know, and as a performer, just as good as her, you know. I think we all have those people that we're really inspired by. And I've been really lucky to meet her several times, and she's wonderful and gives me encouragement. And every time she gets on stage, I cry. I'm a big mess. I'm just like, you know, you are seeing something, again, really magical there.
Is it true that you started doing country but switched to pop because it was thought both by your parents or management that you were too young to sing country songs? They were too deep emotionally and pop would be better?
Well, I started singing rock, actually. Again, there's that, you know, that cousin influence. So I was listening to her albums and I started to tell my parents, you know, I want to change my set and start incorporating some Fleetwood Mac. And then I found people like Lacey J. Dalton, Roseanne Cash, people with a little bit of an edge in the country music. So that was my new set at, like I said, at 12. And I started singing with bands. Whoever, my dad would just go up to fairs, the American Legion, wherever we, you know, barbecues, you know, that were hosted by the community or something. And my dad would just go up and say to the band, hey, I have a daughter who wants to sing. If it didn't go well, he'd say, here's $50, you know. but all of it was an experience for me, and I was not shy. I loved to sing, you know, and all of it was an experience of learning how to work with a band, learning how to be on stage, work an audience. Because, you know, a lot of people are, the band is not really the main focus. They're socializing, they're eating, they're running after their kids. So to get that attention, I had to work really hard, you know, and I was just a little girl. But, you know, usually I'd come out and start singing and people go, this voice, like a 30-year-old, you know, and she's only 12. This is bizarre. But I think all of it led to me now. I mean, the most that I'm proud of is being a live musician. That's probably where I feel the most comfortable. And that was all those earlier experiences. You know, going into pop music at 14 was my producer's idea. I got signed to him at 14 and, You know, my parents didn't know anything about the music industry at all. So they just went from one thing to another. People would refer them. And we ended up meeting George Tobin. I was doing a demo in Burbank, California, another country demo with an edge. And he came down the stairs and someone had said, there's this girl in the studio that just has this voice. You've got to peek your head in there and hear her. And he did, and brought me out into, you know, the little lobby out there and got a guitar. And he said, do you know any Beatles songs? And I said, well, I know a few. I'm a Beatles fan. Well, start singing this. And I was like, well, first of all, who are you? But, I mean, as a kid, I just wanted to sing, so I didn't care. And then he, you know, wanted to take our number down. And he called my parents and he said, I don't know anything about country music. You know, rock is not on the table for her. Unless you wanted to wait later on, because it's just not age appropriate. It's just never going to happen. But I know everything about pop music, and I think, you know, I think there's something there. So I was actually a little disappointed.
No, country was never on the table?
Country was never on the table. George never really wanted to go in a country direction. It just wasn't something that interested him. So it was more pop. And at the time, we went into the studio, and we started recording things that were a little more gritty pop, you know, probably like our modern day Sheryl Crow now, we were doing back then, you know, with acoustic flair, but still pop based, but, you know, a little bit of an edge. And it just didn't work. You know, it was kind of hard to find songs that, again, age appropriate. So, you know, I came in the studio one day and he had the track to I Think We're Alone Now. And I was like, I don't want to sing this song. I heard the original song by Tommy James and the Shondells the day before. He goes, I want you to go home and learn this song. And I was like, oh, okay. Because it's all children behave, you know. And I was like, oh, my, okay. Well, you know, where are we going with this? And I came in the next day and he had the track. And that was totally different. And I took that home and I was like, you know, I really don't want to be a dance artist. I mean, I'm grateful that anybody cares enough to be recording me. I don't mean to, you know, be ungrateful, but nobody's going to know I can sing. And that's, you know, I love dance music. I mean, I listen to Eric B. and Rakim and Lisa and all like, you know, kind of urban dance, like, you know, R&B, rap stuff. I loved all of that, but I didn't want to be that because I wanted to be a singer, you know, a singer. I wanted people to know I could sing. And again, there was always that passion to be a chick in front of a band, rocking out, you know, and I was like, well, this is so far from that. But I took it home and I was learning the song in my bedroom and my girlfriends came over and they started dancing around my room. They loved it. So I went into the studio the next day and did the vocal in like two passes. Still not so convinced. But it's a song that's been with me since then. I mean, 30 years later.
Right. So we're actually celebrating 30 years on the Billboard charts.
I know. It's crazy.
So congratulations. Here
it is. And I do love the song. I have to say, I grew into it. And it was really probably the way the song makes people feel. You know, I mean, even now I go and perform in front of younger crowds who really don't know who I am. But there's that song, you know, as soon as I go, children behave, people go, ah, you know, or I've had young girls come up at 20 something and they're like, are you a new artist? Where can I find that song? I'm like, oh, that is adorable. I love you. And just Google it. It's been around for a while. But I mean, that's the biggest compliment, you know, and I really don't get tired of singing that song. So, you know, I'm glad that. That was one decision that my manager and producer just said, just do this anyway. It was a life lesson.
Right. So we're looking actually in front of us. We have the first time you were ever on a Billboard chart, August 29th, 1987. I Think We're Alone Now.
Do you remember when?
Debuted at number 84.
When somebody, you get a call or how'd you find out? Did you open the page yourself? Do you remember anybody saying, hey, we made it?
Well, when I Think We're Alone Now went number one. I got a call from George Tobin, my manager and producer. And he said, what are you doing right now? And I said, well, I'm doing the dishes. Because I was still going to school. Even during the mall tour, I went to school, you know, then went on the weekends. I'd go on the road, then come back, be exhausted, but I'd be in school. And so I said, well, I'm doing my chores. He goes, well, you'll never have to do chores again. Stop doing that. You're number one on the Billboard chart. And I was thrilled. I don't think I really knew what that meant and how hard that is to achieve and how special that is. I mean, again, I was only 16 by the time it really – I was almost 16. But, you know, I knew that that was a big deal. But, you know, my response was, well, I won't be able to do anything unless I get the dishes done. So I'll be in trouble. He was like, okay, clearly you don't get it. But that was my big celebration. I ended up going to Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor, where they used to do, like, the big they played the drums when they brought you special ice cream sundaes. So that was how I – that's how I celebrated
my, like a special number one. A number one sign. So yeah. The birthday sign. They make up your number one sign.
I had a bunch of my friends, and we all went there, and it was really, really cool. I remember being like, I guess this is really going to, you know, be awesome for me. I mean – and now I totally respect it. I completely get it, you know. I mentor a lot of other artists, and that's the one thing I'm like, look – understand, you'll never understand everything about the music industry. Keep an open mind. Know in your heart what you want to do, because it does start from you. But listen to the people around you. They're there in your life for a reason. They have achieved their success and their positions for a reason. You know, and so, you know, and if you get a chance to even be on a chart at all, be grateful, you know, be really, really grateful, because there's so many, I think for me, as I started to get more and more into the music industry, finding other artists that I love, you know, people like Janis Joplin and stuff, and realizing that they never had that. That sounds crazy. You know, it's like, how could that not, you know, happen? They're legends. But then you start to look at other people and you go, oh, wow, they didn't sell 17 million, you know, albums. They didn't have number ones. How special is it that I did? So I'm forever grateful. Always.
Were you a little happier when Could Have Been went to number one? Did you like that song better because it showed off more vocals?
Yes, that song, we fought to sing that song, record that song. When I heard it again, I heard that song at 14, because it took us a year to make the album. You know, the label MCA didn't want me to record that because they were like, this is just too mature. And I actually was at the meeting and I said, well, I mean, I disagree, because when a 14-year-old girl, 15-year-old, 16-year-old girl breaks up with any boy or any relationship, it is drama. It is that, like, it's changed your life. You're never going to get over it. And I think that they can understand these lyrics just like I understand these lyrics. And it shows that I can sing. It's a beautiful song. So with that, we went ahead and put it on the album, and you know, it went to number one, and it worked. And I love singing that song in my show, you know, again, because it does show I can sing. And it's just such a well-written song. So, you know, to have, you know, two number ones and then a number one album, again, it's just – and then to tour the world, you know, go different places, different countries, and arrive at the airport, and people are screaming your name, and they're wearing jean jackets just like you, and knowing so much about you. It was bigger than I ever expected it to be.
Now, I know a lot of times, you know, especially nowadays when you look at some of these celebrities that who get really famous at a young age and do these kind of things, number ones and tour the world, you know, was that hard for you to adjust to, or do you think that maybe that live training you kind of had growing up made it a lot easier for you to, you know, take all of that in, not be overwhelmed by the pressure or the fame or the fans or anything like that?
I think I just rolled with it. Every day was an adventure. It's still an adventure now. I mean, I'm on the road full time. I haven't stopped for probably the last year. You know, before that, for 30 years, I've still been in the music industry. Maybe not on the charts, but behind the scenes, writing music and producing and growing as a musician, which, you know, is important for me. So it's still an adventure every day. And I think that, yeah, I never got tired of it. You know, there was times that I took some time off the road to be a mom or to just grow as a person, you know, on a personal level. And I think that really helped me. And I have a philosophy. When I start getting tired, you know, where meet and greets where you're not really present, or you're just like, oh, no, because it does happen. That's when I'm like, okay, I need to go home and rest. Because each fan, I do want to be present. I don't want to, again, get in that position where I don't respect it and I'm not grateful for it. you know, sometimes I think if you go past that mark is when you start resenting things or it doesn't become meaningful and you're probably not at your best. So I really do try to take pauses in my career, which is crazy because people go, you can't stop. You know, there's 20 people behind you that will replace you. I mean, that's just the truth. But for longevity, and I think now so many people go, you're not bitter. You love what you do, you know, and you're like, you love your fans. And I'm like, well, that's probably because I can just go home and, you know, put on my sweats and take my makeup off and just be mom and wife and friend and auntie. And it's really important. But for the first like 4 years of my career, that's all I did was tour. And I think there was a time that I, you know, my band members, I kind of look at them and go, did I sing the first verse? Where are we at? You know, because you go on automatic pilot a little bit. And that was very scary to me. I mean, obviously I was a kid, so there was no staying up too late. There was no alcohol or drugs. That was just really doing the same thing every day. And you start to become like a robot. And that was really scary for me, but I was fatigued. So I came off the road right before I was 18, 19 actually, and took a little break and did the new Inside album. And that's when I kind of like wanted to branch out again as a songwriter. It's always been my passion to write songs, but no one was listening. Nobody really cared at the time. So I was always writing poetry behind the scenes and writing songs and kind of trying a little bit at piano, but I'm terrible. Yeah, I have to practice. I open up my mouth and my voice comes out and it's natural. Everything else I have to work at. Songwriting, not so hard, you know, although I've spent a lot of time in Nashville. And that's probably what I'm the most proud of is people know, yes, she's Tiffany. You know, I think we're alone now, the 80s. But they actually embrace me as a songwriter there. So that's taken some time, but it's a great accomplishment for me.
Skip ahead to your album last year that came out, A Million Miles. We talked last year just after the album had come out. I hadn't gotten the chance to listen to the whole thing. And since then, I've realized how deep it is. And in some ways, you know, it's almost 30 years after your debut album. But in some ways, it almost feels like a debut album of sorts because it feels like we're hearing more of your voice as an artist on this album.
Thank you.
Maybe for the first time.
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to go back to, again, some of that stuff like Could Have Been. You know, I've done a lot of different projects, all that I love, and they're I listen to my fans a lot, you know, and they're like, please do a dance album, you know, or please do this. I did The Color of Silence, which was more rock-based, and probably what I'm in the studio now, and when I'm on the road, I'm writing more stuff like that as an extension of A Million Miles. But A Million Miles, that album, my vision for that was to get back to people going, wow, those vocals. You know, and it really was my therapy as a songwriter. You know, on A Million Miles, I wrote about people heartbreak. I mean, I lost a lot of people in 5 year span from cancer, unforeseen circumstances, friendships that just broke up, you know, that people change and it just doesn't work anymore. You know, things, people that you thought would always be there and they're not. So that's kind of what A Million Miles is about. It's not all sad, but it really is a lot of my journey, my life's journey. And songs like A Million Miles or Fall Again, you know, those are really special songs for me. And to perform them sometimes, if I have to take myself out of the, you know, that place sometimes, because I'll start to cry a little bit. They're that meaningful to me. But, you know, that was the first album. This has been the first album that I've come out as a co-producer. Because behind the scenes, I've constantly had an opinion and, you know, I've said this is what I want, but I never felt comfortable taking a title. And on this one, I was like, you know what? I really, I want my name on there. I want people to know that this is my life. There was never been a plan B. It's always been music for me. You know, people sometimes go, oh, the mall girl. Oh, I think we're alone now. And they forget about Coulda Been. You know, they do. They go, oh, you've only had one hit. And well, that's not true. You know, so, and I'm not that person. Like, I don't run around going, well, no. So I just kind of smile. And then I get up and either I talk to them or I'm able to perform. And people go, wow, there's this depth to you that I didn't know. And again, that's a great compliment. And I wanted that to come out on this album, that, you know, music is my life. I really am a musician. You know, I'm not just somebody that's doing this. This is a career for me. And I plug myself around old school people and, you know, people that I can just soak up a lot of information from, you know, and learn from. So, I mean, that's what I do on my off days. You know, I'm just around from new musicians, you know, on the scene in Nashville that are young bloods, you know, but they're really amazing, to, you know, people who've been doing this for, you know, 60 years and, you know, had hits back in the 50s and 60s. I'm lucky enough to call them my friends, you know, spending time and talking to Tommy James was really cool, you know, and he's such a wonderful person. These are the things that I you know, as an artist, that get me really excited. And I try to take whatever advice they give me and just use it somehow. And sometimes you have to wait on that. But, it, you know, like a million miles, it's like, okay, I'm dialing up all these different experiences. Oh, yeah, that's where I want to put this. And so, you know, selecting a lot of the songs for this album, we overcut. So it was really hard to sit down and go, okay, what are the right ones for this album? But I think we chose them. I think it's a well-rounded album.
You mentioned being 14, being in meetings about that first album, and now saying how you're making all the decisions. Was it had to be daunting, right? At that age, you're in a room with guys in suits, and maybe you don't even feel like, I mean, you're the artist, it's your name on the album, but did you feel like, I don't get a say in this at times? And it seems to take a real confidence to speak up at that age.
I think sometimes I knew my place in a weird way, because you just kind of, if you're smart, you just kind of know. And I always wanted to be respectful to people, you know. But I think, yeah, there was definitely some times that I felt like people were making decisions but not understanding my age group, you know. Especially it was more when I wanted to start doing videos and change my live show a little bit. You know, I think my manager's vision for me was more like a Celine Dion, but that was a little premature for a 16 and 17 year old audience. You know, they wanted dancers and they wanted, and even though, again, I really didn't want to become that type of artist, I saw, well, this is kind of where we need to do that. So I did put dancers on the road and I fought for that. I fought for a lot of up-tempo songs, because we were singing songs like, you know, It's the Lover, Not the Love. And my fans were like, eyes went dark. They're beautiful songs that I put in my shows now, but it was too much too soon. Something like Could Have Been made sense, but some of the songs that we recorded after that, I think, were a little too mature. And then the world. Hold an Old Friend's Hand, which is one of my favorite songs. And now if you see me do it live, I'm like, okay, didn't understand the lyrics at 16, 17. I really understand them now. And this is not pretty, you know, another year and I'm still here. The grass just will not grow on this old hill, really, at 45. So, I mean, but again, they're just so well, yeah, they're well-written songs. I mean, people don't know that I'm a Joni Mitchell fan, Joan Baez fan, you know, big Janis Ian fan. So, I mean, something like Hold an Old Friend's Hand, I feel fits into that kind of genre a little bit. And it's nice to have one of those songs that I recorded, you know, in my life. Now, again, going back out on the road and stuff and just being able to strip stuff down and acoustic guitar, I am becoming the artist that, you know, again, like a Joni Mitchell and Joan Baez and people like that. I think you'll know a good song when you can totally strip it down. And if it still holds your attention, there's something there.
And you do a lot of house concerts, even in Nashville with your friends and with other people. But then you can turn around and go to England and do a retro show with Howard Jones and Kim Wilde. So kind of nice that you have both of those sides.
I wear a lot of different hats. Yeah. I mean, that might be confusing to some people. But as an independent now, you know, it's what I need to do. The retro shows, of course, will continue to call, thank goodness. They're the big shows. They're the shows that I get to do in front of 14 to 20,000 people. Multi-bill, great artists attached to it. Why wouldn't I do it? It's a lot of fun. And it's a celebration of my success. You know, I think we're alone now and could have been and all this time. And I saw him standing there. So why not, you know? And then the house concerts, the smaller venues. That is where I'm able to show my new music, you know, keeping it small. And it because it only works in an intimate crowd. That's the only way this works, is the Million Miles Tour. And people get to know me, I think, not just I'm up here singing songs. Of course I do. I think we're alone now, and I do could have been. But we break them down. There's that you're going to get more of an earthy, kind of organic, folky kind of take on it, which is people go, wow, again, that song is – didn't know you could sing that song without, like – you know, the dance moves and all the flash, you know. But it's so meaningful. And it's to hear people singing that song back to me, I Think We're Alone Now, back to me with just an acoustic guitar is timeless. It really is. It's awesome. You know, you're getting old school Tiffany. And then some of these other shows, you're getting the extension, like you said, of what I've become now. And I'm loving living in both worlds. You know, I'm lucky that I have a band that can just kind of pop in and out. I mean, they just follow me to the ends of the earth. And I throw a lot of curveballs. I mean, especially a Million Miles show, no show has been the same. We have a set list, but I get out there and I'm going to do what the room needs. With a bigger production show and the retro shows, you really can't do that. You're kind of locked in. So, I mean, I think I love that as a performer, too, because it keeps me sharp. It keeps me connected to the people.
Yeah, because, I mean, you mentioned just earlier about sort of the autopilot kind of feeling. You know, if it's the same list, we're going to, you know, do this, segue into this, take a break here, you know, insert audience chatter here. Like, that must be awesome for you, like, refreshing, like you said, to just be able to, you know, maybe they're feeling, you know, happier tonight. Maybe something sad happened in the world, and maybe people are feeling a little more somber tonight. Right. We can give them what they need. Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah. And I'm so lucky to have a band that will, again, fly by the seat of their pants. I try not to do that because I want it to look polished and professional. But, you know, yeah, sometimes somebody screams out Spanish Eyes, and I'm like, we can do it, you know. So it really is tailored for the audience. It's 90 minutes of, you know, whatever that evening's going to entail. I designed that show from being in Nashville, and I'm a foodie. I love to cook for people, and I love to play music. You'll always come to my house, and there'll always be instruments all over, and, you know, people will grab a guitar. Most of my friends who come are players. And so, a little, you know, a couple cocktails, full stomach, and then we get onto the music, and you know, some of my friends don't play anything, and they're like, girl, I can't sing. Here's a shaker. Here's a tambourine. So that's what I do for the Million Miles. I hand out shakers and tambourines to the audience, and they're part of it. So you really are like coming to my living room for the evening, and I love that. You know, again, some of the bigger retro shows, you're going to get, again, the dance moves and I don't really wear too much 80s stuff. I let the audience do that. I mean, I love jean jackets, and they're so big now. They're back. Like, everyone's wearing a jean jacket. But I have them, but I'm just always afraid people are going to go, oh, God bless her. She still has her old stuff. She's still wearing her clothes
hanging on
from the 80s. So I don't wear too many jean jackets. But every once in a while, I'll pop something that's fun, you know. I want to do a photo shoot that, you know, is all about the old school pictures, but the new Tiffany. So kind of a retro feel, same poses, same all of that, but, you know, a little different take. But I think that my fans would really like that.
I say it sounds like a Twitter like gold mine. Just like
I think it's going to be really cool. So I'm on a diet right now to be able to do all of that because I was very skinny at 14. But you know, I want to have fun with it. I mean, it really is. And you know, people go, it's been 30 years, and you could be afraid of that number. But I mean, I started out young. I'm only 45 now, and I have a very young spirit about me, and I don't think 45 is old by any means. So I celebrate truly that I've been in the industry for 30 years, but I got another 30 in me, which is a great place to be. So, you know, I want to have fun with my success, and just really from, you know, videos to photos to the music. I'm re-recording a lot of the songs. I saw him standing there. You don't ever want to take something and mess it up. You know, people love it the way that it is. So subtle changes. And we're doing some remix versions for just, you know, because so many of my fans all over the world are hungry for, you know, that music. And so I want to be able to give them something that's maybe a little different. You know, and the retro shows for I Think We're Alone Now, we've extended the whole song. I used to just play it and it's 3 minutes and, you know, whatever, 30 seconds. And I thought, well, this is silly. It's my hit. I should probably extend it and live in the moment a little bit. So that's what we do now. But you learn these things as you go along.
And the stuff you're writing now, is it sort of like the last album, a little bit different?
Well, I mean, for A Million Miles, you know, that was really my singer, you know, album, like my vocalist album coming back. You know, we've got songs called, you know, Waking Up for the First Time, that are definitely up tempo. Right. You know, they're not all ballads on, and it's not all sad. But where I'm going now is a little bit more towards The Color of Silence, and starting to put an edge. And I think I let my albums happen after the tour experience. Because as you're out there, you see what you might be missing. And you hear what the fans, and you see what works. There's nothing like, I mean, even before we recorded the first album, I was out doing those songs in shows. And I was, and no one knew who I was. But we were booking dates. And I was out, you know, and you knew right away from the audience if they liked the song or not.
Right.
And when it didn't work, they didn't get cut. Or they got changed. And I still have that philosophy, really. You only know if you start to perform it in front of people, which is, you know, people, you know, you have to be subtle about it. You can't do, like, you know, 7 new songs, you know, and a retro show. They're, like, boring. But you can pop 2 or 3 in. And right now I have a new single called Can't Stop Falling. And, you know, it's a pop song, but it's got a little bit of an edge to it. And I'm really excited. It's getting great, great response, of course, from the fans. But also, I mean, I just, you know, kind of threw it out when I was in England. I wanted to have something new. And being on the road, I was like, I need more up-tempo, but I don't want dance stuff. And The Color of Silence, that album particularly, was kind of like, you know, a turning point for me. And I wanted to kind of go and back to that and connect. Because, I mean, there's some strong songs on that album like Butterfly that would be perfect with songs like History. So I'm connecting the dots a little bit, and it's I think it's, you know, really making my shows stronger.
As you're on the road currently, are there any trends or anything you're finding now that you think you might want to use, you know, for your next album or going forward?
Well, I mean, I'm around, again, a lot of great musicians. So just being with my band members, you know, and hearing them write songs on the road for their projects, you know, being around a lot of guitar players and just hearing cool licks and cool, like a cool guitar sound. I mean, I'm not a player, but I'm like, that kind of grungy, like, angry thing, I like that. Let's do that.
When you hear it, you know.
When I hear it, I know. Yeah, and I know when I can't. There's a lot of things I'd love to do, but it would be too much for me.
We're not going
to
have a Kendrick Lamar feature on a Tiffany song.
You know, I mean, I kind of know what my fans want, and I can push it a little bit, and they're very open, you know, and they trust me, and they get it. As long as it's real, and I'm having fun, I think they'll go. You know, if it's not real and it's made up, then they're not going to buy it. And I'm not going to be happy, let's be honest. So I really do, you know, I try to record and work on things that I'm like, this is the next progression for me. This is what I'm listening to. This is what I love. And then go in and find, you know, writing with different writers from LA to New York to, in March, I will be going back to the UK and working with producers there and writers and some other people who have thrown out their names to want to write with me and do some things, which are they're artists, and I'm excited about that.
Can't share who it is? Come on.
Well, I'd love to do something with Carol Decker from Tapao. Right. And we've been in friends for a while. She's a redhead. But her voice is amazing. Her range is great. So I try to work with artists that I think will complement each other. You know, I mean, there's other artists now that are releasing singles that just got signed in Nashville that I probably will do something with as well. But, you know, let's face it. I think they're going to be successful. They're going to be busy. But, you know, I've worked with other artists before for the name factor. And, you know, if the vocals don't blend, it's not going to work. You know, Tommy Page, he and I did a song together, and our vocals worked, you know? I mean, I'm so bummed because we were actually going to go in the studio and start writing some stuff together.
Really?
For an Asian tour. So we kind of got cut short on that. And that'll forever, of course, I'm missing a dear friend, but also I wanted that experience again because I think our fans would have loved it. But also just writing with him, it was always a great experience, and our voices blended so well together. You know, I always enjoyed singing with him.
All right, we've given you an assignment, Tiffany. We gave you homework before you came here because we're charts, we're Billboard.
Yes.
We wanted you to have the chance to make the charts. Why should we have all the fun?
The All Tiffany Top 5.
Yes, this is you getting to chart your five favorite songs that you've recorded.
And we got to go 5-1.
Right.
So we can't, you know.
Okay,
can't
5
give away
to
the
one.
Big one.
My all-time favorite songs that I've recorded. Okay. Here in My Heart, Diane Warren song. Love that. Love the video. It was the first time I did like the big budget video in Paris, and I thought I was fancy pants. Let me tell you. So I love that song. I love singing that song. And again, it was something that shows my range. So
that was kind of the one song on the New Inside album that maybe was the bridge to your previous sound, because the rest of it was a little bit more kind of New Jack Swing, early 90s.
Yes.
That really
yes.
still showed your vocals, that song.
That song, I mean, to have a Diane Warren song anyway is like, yeah, I'm a big fan. And just I recorded that album here in New York. So that was like a first time experience for me. And that song is just magical. I mean, it's heart-wrenching, you know? So, I mean, now even when I sing that song, it's like I'm so proud of it, you know? It is really – it's a hard song to sing. It's not an easy
– It's a high vocal.
It's a high yeah. vocal. There's days I'm like, woof, okay. But I love it, you know?
Well, it starts high and then it goes really low, so it's a real range.
It's a right? big range. It really is. But I think that it was all of it, having a Diane Warren song, recording it in New York, going to Paris and doing the video there. You know, I mean, I Think We're Alone Now and all the other songs, that was just on the fly with a handheld camera and kind of like, you know, I didn't get storyboards. I didn't get stylists. So, you know, that album itself was kind of the big budget rollout, you know, but it's kind of cool to have that. I'm not going to say it's not, you know, you really feel like I've made it, you know, and to have hair and makeup and wardrobe was needed, I will say first, but it was nice.
All right. Good job. Keep going.
Number four.
Tell me. Number four would probably be If Only, because I wrote that about my bodyguard, who became like my brother and my son's godfather, and he passed away from cancer. So, again, another person that I thought was always going to be in my life, and I wanted to really write a song about, you know, how heart-wrenching it was to lose somebody, how unexpected. And there was really a time, even though it was, you know, totally platonic. I mean, that we never messed around or anything like that.
The bodyguard film?
No, it wasn't. We didn't fall in love. It was a brother and sister love, and he was really there to protect my life. You know, he was on the road with me, and he would have. But when he passed away, it was the only time that I ever felt like, I don't know if I want to go on without this person. You know, I mean, I would never harm myself, but it really scared me. Because he was so, you know, he's my son's godfather, and he was my counsel, my friend, my bestie, everything. And I felt the world felt safer with him around me. And so it kind of took me back a little bit. And I think that's what, you know, If Only is about. It starts off very dark, you know, about somebody contemplating taking their life. Which was not my headspace at the time, but, you know, that's probably one of the darkest lyrics that I've ever written, you know, and I kind of even question putting that out there. But, you know, I've had so many compliments on that song that it's actually been healing. It's actually done the opposite. So, and that was my intention, hopefully. You know, you got a lot of power when you're a songwriter. You have to be careful, but you also have to write the truth, whatever that is at the time.
Nice. Keep going. You're good at this. You're good at this.
Number three. Let's see. What did I have for number three? I think I had... It's never enough. You broke your heart last night. It's never not the dream that didn't work out right. Definitely It's the Lover, Not the Love.
You're just making fun of that song.
I wasn't making fun of it. I said it was too much too soon.
All right.
Now, you know, I love that song. And again, it's that, you know, here we go. They're all ballads that I'm picking because they show that I can sing. But It's the Lover, Not the Love is your classic, you know, you've been burnt. But, you know, that's one person in your life. It's you are capable of loving. You know, don't be afraid to jump back out there. But I think a lot of people close themselves off. So I've always thought that song, I didn't write that song, but I identify with it, you know, because, I mean, I haven't dated that much. I've been married, you know, twice. But yeah, after your first divorce, you're like, I don't know if I want to do this again, you know, and I'm glad that I didn't get burnt out, you know, about 6 months later. I ended up meeting this wonderful man who I've been married to now for 14 years. But it was easy at the time before I met him to go, yeah, I'm, you know, I'm independent. I don't really need to do this. Like, you know, I'll just do my music. And I had a bad attitude. So I'm glad. And I identify with that song.
That's how you record a song when you're so young. And then years later, it can mean so much, such a different way years later.
Totally. So it was, you know, like I said, singing it to 16-year-olds, they were like, what? Singing it to 40-year-olds, they're in tears. Oh, no. I'm screaming in a fan. I doubt that any of my words will make it through. This is your christening. By now, but you've been missing. And I promise it'll make you feel better. This is your christening. The honey is just missing me. Number two would probably be Christening. I really like that song a lot. And I like where I'm at with that song now. I've reworked that song. So we've added a lot more edge to it. I did a dance mix off of that song. I love the video of that song. But it also, you know, that guitar at the end, that rockin' guitar, I think, again, that's not what you expect from Tiffany.
Right.
So, you know, for me, that was something I really wanted to record. And it turned the corner for me a little bit. So, yeah, I'm very proud of that song.
Yeah, I remember last year saying how at one of the 80s shows in New York, you were covering Guns N' Roses, and people don't know the strength of your vocals.
Maybe no, they
do,
don't.
But to do a song like that.
And they don't know I'm a rocker. So they go, you do Guns N' Roses? What? And I'm like, and then I come out and I hopefully nail it. Sweet Child.
Okay.
Yeah. And people are like, what? yeah, I love these little surprises. I mean, I really do. And hopefully that's what happens. I mean, you know, you go out to show off your best. But I mean, yeah, Sweet Child, doing Sweet Child songs like Butterfly, Christening, and a lot of the stuff that I'm writing now, you know, I'm surrounded with a lot of different people in my life. And I somehow managed to, you know, cross paths with a lot of people in the rock scene. And they're just like, why aren't you doing rock music? I'm like, well, it's just not what I need to be doing. You know, I would have loved to have done it, you know, but it just didn't happen. But it's nice that you're paying attention, and it's nice that you just gave me that compliment. It's nice that you think I could do it. You know, I'll take that and walk away with a big smile on my face. And, you know, and I, it would be great to like get up and jam with a bunch of different people eventually, you know? So who knows what's around the corner. I do have some tricks up my sleeve a little bit. But just to be acknowledged again that, you know, I do have the chops that can hold that.
Right.
And the attitude a little bit.
I'm picturing like either like somebody's Rock Hall induction or like one of those like Grammy mashups like that you know, kind of like that would be
Be sick. I mean, totally. I'd love to be, you know, called to do something like that where I come out and they're just like, you know, I could see the faces at first, like, what?
Well, but she wandered on during the wrong set.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, wow. So, yeah, I'd love the opportunity to do that kind of stuff. I mean, my ultimate favorite song that I've ever recorded is Could Have Been. You get on what could have been on a cold. That's my favorite.
Number one
with the number one.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, again, from hearing that song the first time to even, you know, growing up and you know, feeling that way, you know, feeling that that person was right for you and it just didn't work out, to becoming really good friends with Lois Blaish, the songwriter of that song. I was 14 when I recorded it. I was around all these great songwriters from my first and second albums. But I was a kid. Nobody hung out with me. So now to be an adult, sit down and have a glass of wine and talk shop with these people, and that they're the fact that they're still in my life,
right.
They come to my shows, and they're still doing their careers, you know, is who gets that? Right? I mean, you know, who would have thought that they would become my friends later on in life? But Could Have Been is my ultimate all-time favorite. You know, it's done, believe it or not, we've actually done it on an acoustic guitar, which it was not, it's not an acoustic, it's not a guitar song. But we have to work around it a little bit, but it is amazing. Or just sitting with a piano, you know, and just stripping it down like that. But there's just, those notes aren't easy either, but I have them in the bag, and right. I'm very, very grateful.
What was that? When I saw you last year, I think you started doing that song, and halfway through, it was something off with the instrument. You just started over? You didn't
oh,
care?
Yeah.
You're like,
I'll just start again.
Live. It's real.
Or I don't, you know, and that's one song, actually. I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to play. I know the song. We're good. And it's actually sometimes magical like that. Again, just, you know, I keep using that word because it is. Like, you know, there's just this great vibe around that song. And I think people, again, can identify from when, you know, you're a kid to, again, being older to a guy or a girl. You know, it just, it kind of breaks down all the barriers a little bit. So it really is my favorite song that I recorded. And I love that I recorded that. The actual recording of that was done in one take. So I'm very proud of that as well.
And when I heard that Dolly Parton everyone turned it down.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of people turned that song down. I mean, let's face it, that truly is a country song. And that's probably another reason why I love it is because, yes, it's a pop single, but the base of that song is still country. So, you know, for me, that, you know, that was like the best thing. I'd love for other people to record it now. I mean, even though I'm not the writer on that song, I think it still has a life and I think it could be redone. You know, Carrie Underwood singing on American Idol, and she did an amazing job with it. So I was, you know, called. I didn't get to see it. I saw it later. But, you know, I had so many messages on my cell phone. Girl, Carrie Underwood singing your song. You know, and again, I was like, good choice, because it's a beautiful song.
Good job on the countdown, too.
Well, thank you.
Honorary Billboard chart department member.
No, we got to get you a paycheck and sign you up.
I'll come to New York anytime, guys.
Well, thank you so much. This is great. Thank you for just sharing your story and your five favorite songs of yours.
Well, thank you, and I hope, you know, I hope people like those five favorite songs, you know. Yeah, and they're all songs that I'm currently doing in my show, so come out and check them out.
You're welcome back here anytime.
Well, thank you. Thanks, guys.
New Tiffany music on the Billboard Chartbeat podcast. That's Can't Stop Falling. That was really fun chatting with Tiffany. We talked for a while, but she really cool to hear all these thoughts about her career. And I like the line how she said, I've got another 30 years in me. So she's just the beginning.
Yeah, that's crazy for people, I think, who, you know, I mean, Tiffany's only, you know, in her 40s.
I mean,
this is, people would think, you know, oh, she was popular 30 years ago, so she must be, you know, just, you know, on the traveling circuit at this point. And it's like, no, she's still, you know, I mean, she's still the same age as people like, you know, Mariah, and I mean, like plenty of people who are still, you know, actively out there putting out new music every, you know, every couple of years.
Right. All right. Next time I got to talk to her about Nashville.
I was going to say,
The connect. You made that connection very early on. Talking about Nashville, talking about shopping. So,
Gary.
Next time.
Gary, booking some weekend trips to Nashville to get a little hooked in the culture.
Do a little research for next time. So, Tiffany, and as we said last week, before we ended last week's show, we have Tiffany on. We got to have Debbie Gibson on, too. So she's going to join us next week because she's celebrating her 30th anniversary in the charts. It was 30 years ago that Only in My Dreams is going to be in the top 20 on the Hot 100. Her debut album, Out of the Blue, was released and debuted on the Billboard 200. So next week, it's Debbie Gibson on the podcast. And we'll go from number 20 to number 1.
We will. So watch out, Deb heads. Be sure to tune in for that one.
Oh, you've done your research. You know, they're Deb heads.
The original fan army, I guess, in a lot of ways.
So that is coming up next week. We'll continue on. We'll get to the number one song this week, 30 years ago, 1987. Until then, what should we close with this week, Trevor?
Oh, this week. Oh, man. Tough choices. I think, you know, there are a few names on the 80s podcast that I think we haven't quite been able to touch. I know Madonna was one that we saw a little while ago. I'm going to throw it to a guy who we briefly mentioned way back when. We talked about Natalie Cole, who didn't quite get his due and unfortunately won't get his due on this particular chart. That is the one and only The Boss, Bruce Springsteen. So I think we should close with the Bruce Springsteen penned but Natalie Cole recorded version of Pink Cadillac.
And this will be a little preview for at some point we're going to do a 1988 countdown too.
Are we?
I think we should.
All right. In the meantime, we'll have Bruce/Natalie take it away. Vroom, vroom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.